Hi, I'm Maggie Pagano, editor of Reaction, and this is a special, literally on the hoof podcast coming, well, only minutes after Liz Truss has announced that she is finally going, but not for another week. And I'm delighted to talk about all of this and explain what's really going on is the prestigious, eminent political editor, Jo Murphy, who has been writing about Westminster for more years than most of us care to remember, 30 odd years, if not more. And you're a political editor, Jo, at the Mail on Sunday, Sunday Telegraph, and indeed many years at the Evening Standard. And then our other guest today is Mark Fox, also immersed in politics, a parliamentary candidate, knows everything that goes on inside the party, and also deputy chairman, I have to say, of Reaction. So, guys, what do you think? Jo, tell me, do you wish you were still writing?
Well, I must say, I probably picked the wrong year to retire if I wanted to be busy, busy.
Yeah.
But you know what? This madness takes a toll on political journalists. And I'm quite enjoying being a spectator for once. Okay. And I have to say, being slightly retired does give you a different perspective on politics.
Okay.
A perspective that I think the Tories need to be aware of.
Yeah. And what is that different perspective? What is your main
perspective? The perspective is the cost of living. Like lots of people, the 500,000 who stepped away from their jobs towards the end of the pandemic, I'm on a fairly fixed income. It upgrades a little bit, but not in line with inflation necessarily. So the Tories need to reassure people like me in a demographic that they traditionally rely on at general elections that they're not a bunch of incompetent fools who are going to send the pound further down and inflation further up.
Well, that's a fairly hard task, I think, right now. Although it is noticeable the pound has edged up a little bit. It's 1.13. And not a very nice indictment, though, is it, for Liz Truss? Resign and the pound goes up. Mark, what do you think is going to happen next? Graham Brady has said we'll have a new prime minister within a week. Does that suggest that they're going to go back to the membership in some way?
So I think it matters less what mechanism they use to get a new leader installed than that they do as quickly as possible. There are only two serious candidates, as far as I can see, given that Ben Wallace and Jeremy Hunt have ruled themselves out, and that's Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt. Now, it would be better for everybody if Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt could work out a joint ticket, come forward, and that the whole process could be expedited. Because I think Paul Goodman, the great Conservative home editor and former Member of Parliament and sort of wise head, you know, refers to this as the right-wing entertainment industry, you know? And it's all very jolly for all these sorts of characters, you know, who write for all the newspapers that we used to work for when I was working for Joe and making his tea, getting his dinner from the canteen and the Mail on Sunday and all of that, right? But the truth of the matter is there is a country to be governed, and we're at a uniquely serious post-World War II moment. You know, politicians often say this is the most consequential election of our time, and most of the time it really isn't, but this really is. So I would like to see those two characters get their act together and form a government that draws from all the available talent across the Conservative Party, get some serious and senior people in, and try and get this show back on the road, really.
I'm going to disagree with Mark in one respect. Yes, it would be nice to get it done fast by next Friday, but really, I think getting it right is much more important because the Tories have got it wrong several times in a row now. Mrs. May was not the Prime Minister that they thought she would be. Boris Johnson was the Prime Minister they thought he would be, and perhaps might have been right for the moment, but he was wrong in recent times. And Liz Truss has been wrong on any measure, I think. They can't do it again. And I would like to think that Graham Brady has delivered the black spot tonight to Liz Truss because he has had talks and has found a weight of opinion behind the two candidates, for example, that Mark mentioned, or behind some other uniting force and a change in the rules. Hopefully, that's how politics should be done. Hopefully, he has done all that and the party is ready to swiftly unite around a new leader. But I want to see evidence that the rule change that is going to have to take place probably has been agreed, and evidence that either Sunak or Mordaunt or somebody else is going to come up, take over the job, and be accepted by all sides of the party without any strange surprises.
So, Joe, you think that it would be perfectly okay and proper to do this without going back to the membership in some way? That it doesn't move beyond that the parliamentary party are the ones who can decide and should vote?
Clearly, it's not going to go back to the membership in the usual way of a long postal ballot. So the two possibilities now are an electronic ballot of the members, which can be done, but it's hard to say it's properly democratic with a party of rather elderly people who aren't necessarily tech savvy. And the second way, the rules can be sidelined by having one candidate go from the parliamentary section to the membership for a confirmatory electronic ballot or no ballot at all. And that's the direction that I think that the party has to go in. The membership has, the leadership, a long leadership contest has been good in the past when it elected David Cameron, for example, who was somebody who might not have emerged otherwise, but for that long process that brought his strengths out in the end. But at the moment, the membership just can't be relied on not to be driven into a silly mistake. And I think they made a silly mistake last time, egged on by some very major newspapers, of the conservative-leaning newspapers who ought to know better, who were chasing novelty, I think, and rather old-fashioned, out-of-date Tory slogans as well about tax cuts rather than real politics. It's time for real politicians, grown-ups at Westminster, to really take over again and take back the rights they used to have and impose their leadership on the party all over the country.
You said a couple of times that that the Tory party voted the wrong candidate in May, in Johnson, and indeed to Truss. Who do you think would qualify as the right candidate now at this moment of crisis? What qualities do we need? For example, somebody was proposing Penny Mordaunt last night, and there was a very strong view, well, she wouldn't be able to speak to the markets, to the financial markets, whereas Rishi would. How important do you think that is? But Penny would bring other strengths. For example, she'd bring unity. She's very strong. She's brilliant at the dispatch box, all these things. So in your mind, how would you decide on the right candidate?
The right candidate for my sort of position in life, my demographic, is somebody who's going to calm things down, calm the markets, and stop us all being made even worse off over the next few years. Now, Rishi Sunak has one very big claim, which is that he was runner-up in the summer in the leadership contest, and he was top in the MP section of the leadership contest. So there's a kind of logic for the runner-up to take over when the winner has fallen on her sword within 6 weeks of taking office. There's a sort of slight hint of a democratic mandate about the runner-up getting the job, a deputy president, maybe a vice president. I think that he is clearly a figure who commands a lot of respect among a lot of MPs. The problem is reconciling his leadership with those, with the block of MPs on the right who rejected him last time. And I think what Mark said about every part of the party being represented, well, that's the negotiation that has to take place, isn't it? They have to be brought on before a single candidate can be imposed. And whether it's Penny Mordaunt, Rishi Sunak or somebody else, clearly there's got to be an allocation of cabinet seats done under wartime rules, where every big section of the party is properly represented and consulted and can feel confident they're not going to be sold down the river or purged.
Indeed. Mark, what do you think about who would be the right candidate?
No, I think although Joe's disagreeing with me, I'm going to vigorously agree with Joe.
All right.
Right. Nice. And what I think is that for some time, Conservative Party politics has been diverging away from what the business community would prefer, We saw this in Brexit. If business had a clear voice, had an effective voice, right, we would never have gone for Brexit. And I think that is a reality that is being driven on the ground, right, where the Conservative Party has to find votes to win elections. And I'm all in favour of having a bank manager as Prime Minister, right? But I'm not entirely clear in my mind that that Rishi Sunak can stack up the political stability inside the House of Commons. I'm all in favour of fellow party members having a vote on the leader, except that we do not live in a presidential democracy. We live in a parliamentary one. And the thing that has undermined Theresa May, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss is that they have not been able to command the support of the majority of the members of Parliament. And that's the same problem. Labour has the same problem, right? With Jeremy Corbyn, for example, you can win in the country, but you have to be able to run the party in Parliament. And so I think that, which is why I say I would like to see Sunak and Morden work out a viable joint proposition, because I don't think there are plenty of unviable alternatives to them, but I don't think there is a different pairing that makes current Conservative politics work, although I'm happy to be proved wrong.
So one PM, one deputy, something like that, with the Chancellor.
Because
I was going to say, does both of what you have been referring to actually point to something far more fundamental and deeper here, which is that the parliamentary party and the party, if you like, or membership, is deeply split about some very, very basic issues, and that we might well see a split or splintering of the party. People talk about one nation, the right wing. Actually, it's not even as simple as that. All parties are coalitions, right? It's whether you can come somewhere in the centre. But I mean, if you listen to Hunt and the new budget, there was nothing there that spoke to the small business community. It was sort of big business again. No, and this is very useful.
But it's all very well, Maggie, you know, everybody lamenting about small and medium-sized business, right? Nothing has hurt small and medium-sized business more, nothing but Brexit. It has clobbered small and medium-sized business. Big business has enjoyed Brexit because it can take it in its stride, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just knock on the head this canard that the Conservative policies have been geared to helping small and medium-sized business.
Or not geared, you mean? Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. That Brexit was the one. Okay.
Right?
So why do we think that Jeremy Hunt is not going to stand? Because, I mean, some people would have thought he was sort of a shoo-in. He did quite well. Well,
I must say, I think it's a shame, and because he would be a very credible leader and he would add something to the debate. And let's be honest, everybody who stood in the summer contest took a few injuries in that contest, didn't they? I mean, Sunak was subject to quite a strong negative campaign. Penny Morden was certainly subjected to a battering in some of the Tory-leaning papers.
Yeah.
And Hunt, by virtue of coming virtually last in the MP section, was kept fairly unscathed. So perhaps he could have come in. And I think a lot of Sunak supporters would be very interchangeable with Jeremy Hunt.
Yeah, and indeed, didn't Penny supported Hunt in the leadership challenge against Boris, didn't she? Which surprised a lot of people. So they're
obviously. Indeed. But my reading is that, you know, Hunt's ruled himself out, but if there has been a consensus emerging behind the scenes, behind one of the other big beasts, then that makes sense. He'll be Chancellor, he'll keep reassuring the markets. But I'm sure that he could be prevailed upon to change his mind and put down his Treasury red pen if another candidate failed to get that critical majority to be imposed smoothly.
Going back to the sort of deeper divisions, do either of you think that actually might be the logical conclusion of this, that there has not been a resolution of big issues like immigration, which we only just now realizing was clearly a huge battle between Braverman and Liz Truss. I mean, there are some quite big issues there that need to be resolved, and whether a new unity candidate will have to face those same issues.
Well, isn't the Tory party's fundamental problem is that a section of it has diverted from reality over recent years. Reality about unfunded spending and tax cuts being realistic or being sustainable without provoking what is exactly what happened in the last month, which is a crisis of confidence on the markets. Reality about immigration being cut. I mean, the Brexit campaign, and Mark rightly alluded to its role in this, always said, we'll give you control over immigration, because the people running it knew very well that they couldn't reduce immigration. But of course, the whistle, the dog whistle that was heard by a lot of voters who subsequently went on to vote Conservative, was that immigration would come down. And it's not going to come down. It may be managed differently, but clearly there's no control of the borders, and Liz Truss recognised that growth and curbing immigration are two opposing policies. And the Tory party, it's got to do more intellectual spade work, and the people who are in leadership positions in the party who understand these things have got to do more downward explaining of their positions and in, you know, and persuading the party membership of what, remember, J.S. Mill memorably called the stupid party, not because its members were stupid, but because stupid people tended to go in that direction. The Tory party spent too much time appealing to stupid people, as it were, with policies that sound good, but really don't reflect reality and don't reflect their heroes' realities. I mean, Margaret Thatcher would not have done what Liz Truss has done, even though Liz Truss claimed to be evoking her memory.
Okay. But aren't there two very big issues within that immigration issue? One is the illegal migrants coming across the channel, and then the other is either the free movement that we had with the EU or allowing others to come in on a point system. I mean, you know...
But Maggie, it's very interesting, right? Because I would say to you that that is a good example of like what I would say is Ponzi scheme politics. You set out three totally spurious lines of thought that are very dominant in current conservative thinking.
Mm.
So we have very successfully exchanged migrants who wanted to come here to work, who were skilled and trained and wanted to add to the economy.
Mm.
We've stopped them coming in exchange for an endless flow of people who are here illegally and who we don't allow to work. Okay. And we have no chance of arresting the flow in illegal migration unless we can have a good working relationship with France and the European Union, which, to Liz Truss's credit, she was trying to sort out in the few days that she had as Prime Minister. And only yesterday, God obscured, you know, yesterday or the day before, when it was, you know, the disagreement with Suella Braverman was about being more realistic about letting skilled migration come into the country to get some growth going. That caused Suella Braverman to resign, and this and the downfall, you know, basically provoked the downfall of the Prime Minister, right? But it's not, Maggie, till we can get away from what Boris, if he was talking about himself, you know, Boris's politics was, you know, a political form of an inverted pyramid of piffle. That it was electorally successful, there is no doubt. But the resultant mess is here for all to see.
I totally agree with much of what Mark said, but I'd go further and say that the Tories have become addicted in recent years to wedge politics, where the rights and wrongs of issues like immigration are pushed into secondary place behind how can this be used in election context, or and in the case of immigration, you saw the Rwanda scheme. It wasn't ever considered to be an effective way of stopping the small boats, realistically, but it was an effective way of preparing an election dividing line that would expose Labour to the charge that they would would take off the handbrake on immigration through small boats. I mean, my take on small boats, by the way, is, like Mark, I mess about in small boats sometime. This was a problem that was going to happen. Brexit has made it harder to contain, but the problem really was that people gained knowledge of how relatively easy, albeit very dangerous, it might be to cross the channel. And that knowledge spread.
I think this is going to be, whatever happens to the Tory party, this is going to be and remain, get even a bigger issue. So why did Brexit, maybe I'm missing something, make it, why was illegal, the increase in illegal migration across the channel? Why did that increase it?
It's a theoretical thing. That greater cooperation, that Brexit undid cooperation in Europe, and that greater French cooperation and the holding of rules about first country of passage might have given us the chance to send people back. But I don't think that would have made the be all and end all difference to a crisis that is actually doesn't have a simple solution.
No, it doesn't, does it? And you're right, I think Liz Truss's finest moment will be remembered when she went to Prague. And had, you know, got on very well with Macron. And in fact, Macron this morning has put out something rather a sweet message saying, I feel very sorry for her personally, not sort of his usual grand arrogance, but quite thoughtful. Anyway, so let's assume Penny is going to be prime minister and Rishi is deputy, Hunt is chancellor. What do they need to do to rebuild, and do they have any hope of winning the next election?
Yes, they have a hope of winning the next general election. Okay. It's 2 years away. Mm-hmm. The electorate's memory seems to have grown fairly short. Mm-hmm. let's be honest. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. There is time for them to improve, and I'm sure they will from the current low base. And there is time for Keir Starmer to either make mistakes or fail to improve and galvanise people. And I think
we have a frozen.
So just while we have a frozen Joe, Maggie.
Yeah.
I would say to you that I would build on
competence for a start. It's very hard right now to call yourself the party of competence. The party of controlling immigration, really hard with the small boats crisis to claim you are that. The party that avoids the coalition of chaos when Nicola Sturgeon comes riding down to tell Prime Minister Starmer what to do. It's hard to say that you're not a coalition of chaos when the party and government are in such chaos at the moment. But the way they overcome this, of course, is to remember that elections are not referendums on the governing party alone. They are also a choice between the current administration and a future untried administration. And that, I think, is what we're hearing ministers trying to get in place, a sense that however bad things now are, it could be worse. So you've heard every cabinet minister talking about the militant unions, and sort of in language that we haven't heard so much of for a decade or so. Mm-hmm. The Jeremy Hunt's performance on Monday, which was very calming, but setting in place new safeguards and advisory committees. That is about calm. And Keir Starmer, who's coming out saying you've got chaos under the Tories, but a Labour Party of stability, is at the moment probably more convincingly stable. But there's a long way to go, isn't there? And if the markets calm down, if the price of gas comes down, the Tories are going to have an argument to make.
Yeah, indeed. Do you buy the view that some people are putting around that what has happened actually sort of creates a de facto trap for Starmer, because of the power of the markets, where they basically said you can't have tax cuts, you can't have huge spending rises without, you know, balancing the books, makes him very difficult for Starmer and Rachel Reeves to go in and say, right, actually, we're going to get rid of business rates because it's destroying small business. We're going to put another 10 billion a year into the NHS and so forth. Makes it very difficult for them, doesn't it?
It's funny, isn't it, how politics, something that is a strength one day can become the weakness of the next. An 80-seat majority can be the seeds of your downfall if you are not capable of managing all those people with no jobs in Parliament, as we've seen. And yes, you're right. And there was a very key scene, I thought, on Monday when Rachel Reeve did a stunning sort of job replying to Jeremy Hunt. And then he, replying to her, also did very well. And he put in at the end, well, we've shown we can put taxes up on my side of the house. Can you on your side of the house show that you can control spending or bring it down and make it more efficient? And I felt that the Labour's smile slightly dropped at that moment. And so we see again, here we go. This is a dividing line for the next general election. Keir Starmer obviously has to make promises. He has to make bold promises, according to lots of his supporters who want to differentiate the party from the Conservatives. Yeah. And every bold promise that involves spending money will be costed, and he'll have to hold it to be held to account for that. And if I were him, I would be thinking, what locks can I put on future tax rates? Especially income tax rates, there's no great case for a big raise in income tax in terms of the amount of money that we bring in without causing a bit of disruption. And if he can put a lock on future Labour spending now and disappoint his left-wing supporters before he gets into office, I think people would probably respect that.
Mm. No, you're absolutely right. And not only has Jeremy Hunt raised the idea again that might do a windfall tax on energy, but also banks. And you do wonder whether the Tories might be the first with a wealth tax. I mean, something else that Labour has talked about. Mark, you talk to business people all the time. And we had the Tesco chairman on Sunday who actually shocked a few people by saying, you know, there are some good policies there that we quite like. Well, what are you hearing and what do you think of how Labour will have
to... I'll just add to what Joe says, you see, because I take a bit of a different view. I think the worse it gets, the more it suits Labour, because they can come into office saying, well, we would love to do X, Y, and Z, but we can't because of the restrictions, this terrible shambles. So I thought that piece in the FT the other day by Janan Ganesh was absolutely just completely wrong, you know? And it was just a completely fundamentally wrong analysis. So the bigger the mess, the more it suits, I think, Labour, because it has a huge chance to show that it is economically tough and responsible and blame the Tories potentially for years, right? So there's that. So I think
I'm just going to throw two general elections at you, which I think run counter to that wisdom. One is 1992, when there was a £50 billion black hole in the public finances, and the Tories very effectively produced the double whammy. Your taxes go up and prices go up if you vote Labour. And people who were worried voted to stay with the devil they knew.
So on that, Joe, I will say to you, Neil Kinnock and Sheffield.
Okay. I won money on that 1992 election. Was it 21 majority you got in the end, John Major?
Was the second one, Joe?
Yes.
97. Obviously, Clare and Brown were a considerable improvement on Kinnock and Hattersley, but they had the advantage that the economy was going gangbusters and people were feeling relaxed enough to trust a new party with the gold and silver.
But perfectly true, Joe. But it's a perfectly good example. Except I suppose I would say to you, end of a long period of Conservative rule, Mr. Blair looked like a Conservative. At that point, we didn't know Mr. Brown was slightly off his trolley, did we? We thought he was responsible. So you know, we'll see, right? I mean, one of the things is, I suppose, Joe and Maggie, is that we've all lived long enough to realise that the rules that used to pertain before have more or less gone, except one or two fundamental ones, like you can't buck the markets, and there is a sort of a limit to lunacy, which we've now tested. To your point, Maggie, which is, you know, it depends what sort of business we're talking about, but I think people who are trying to run businesses and charities and organisations want a period of calm and stable government, right? I think, Joe and Maggie, that we're a bit like, strangely, back into that period in the run-up to 1979, where perhaps what people above all wanted was a reassurance that Britain could actually be governed.
Well, that is a great moment to thank you both for a wonderful discussion. And maybe we can meet again next week when we know who will be PM. Your point about whether Britain can be governed, the lovely joke last week was that we are like Italy, but without the gorgeous food and the lovely weather.
Yeah, it's something the Italians have gone completely bonkers about, by the way, that economist cover.
Yeah, they don't like it at all. The point is, I think, about what everyone misses about Italy is they don't need governing. They just sort of self-govern. You know, they do it without a government. Maybe that's what we need to learn. It's just natural anarchists. Anyway, thank you both very much. That was fantastic. And we'll see you. Watch and see.
Okay. See you soon.
See you.